Welcome to episode 473 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm Josh Pollard.
And I'm Richard Gunther, and this is the show where we talk about consumer entertainment technology. And I know we've talked to you already, but I feel like Happy New Year.
Yeah, it feels like so long ago.
And it wasn't really that long. It was just CES, like a week and a half ago.
I know, but it feels like CES already feels like it was a really long time ago. And I think there's one more tiny piece of CES information that I think we need to share with people, because it might be the most amazing piece of CES information to come out of CES 2019.
Whoa, okay. Yeah. I don't even know where you're going with this.
This is huge news. Neither of us got sick.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, seriously. That never happens.
You know why? Because we were lame and we're not out stupid late every single night.
I don't think that that's lame. I think that that's smart. Also, I had my airborne going on, right? Like, I was taking the sickness preventative, whatever it is. What's the term for medicine that isn't really medicine? Whatever. It made me feel like I wasn't going to get sick, and it worked.
Sure. Whatever it takes, man. Whatever it takes.
Exactly.
All right. We only have one other thing from CES that we're going to talk about tonight, and that is going to be in the gaming section. It won't take long, but it was something. Yes. Placebo is the word you were looking for.
Placebo. Yes. Thank you.
I've been struggling with words to this whole day, so we'll see how this podcast goes. I couldn't come up with placebo either. We're going to have one piece of CES coverage from a device that I got to go hands-on with at CES shortly after we recorded our show there. So we'll cover that in the gaming section. But everything else, it's just news that's happened since CES. So let's jump right into the video news, because we don't have any feedback, probably because we haven't released an episode since CES. So if you'd like to send us some for next time, entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com is the email address, or just head on over to the website and use the contact form. All right. First video news. At first, seems like kind of a big deal, Richard, but maybe not quite as big of a deal as one might hope.
Well, it's kind of not a big deal for people like you and me, because we're probably old. Well, I'll speak for myself. I know that you watch a lot of TV on your tablet, so maybe this would matter to you if you had an iPad.
Right.
So the news is that the Channels app, which is pretty much everybody's recommended app for watching television from the HD Home Run Prime tuner.
Not even just the Prime.
Well, HD Home Run tuners, but it also works with the HD Home Run Prime tuner, which is what's so nice about it, on many different devices, and specifically on iOS and on Apple TV. And it was, for a long time, the only way that you could watch your HD Home Run Prime content on the Apple TV. Well, if you want to buy the Apple TV app, it costs you $15. And if you want to buy the iOS app, it costs you $15. Now, here's the good news. If you're an Apple user and you have both of those devices, something on iOS and something on tvOS, you only pay for it once. Mm-hmm. Because their apps are universal, and you could buy it in one place and use it in the other place if the application developer supports universal apps. And the Channels app eventually became a universal app. Well, they decided to make the iOS version, the version that will run on your phone or tablet, free for everybody. So it doesn't cost you $15. You can use their app to play television from your HD Home Run devices at no cost now on your tablets or on your phones that are iOS-based. You still have to pay for the tvOS device, for the one that will play on your Apple TV. So it's probably good news if, like many people, you consume most of your content on a tablet. I'm not one of those people. I still like the big screen in front of my sofa. But I think this is really interesting, and I think it is kind of aligned with where the market is right now. Like, I think it's, we are seeing more and more people consuming television content on smaller devices. So this is great for that audience.
Yeah, that's absolutely great news. All right. Well, so that's free stuff and that's great news. What's not great news is having to pay more for existing subscriptions that you might love. And that, of course, is the news out of Netflix. They are raising their rates for the first time in, I don't know, a couple of years, 3 years. I'm not sure how long it's been since we've had a rate hike over at Netflix. It's been a little while.
Hasn't been that long.
It hasn't been that long?
No, I think it went up like a dollar, like a year or two ago or something like that.
Oh, I thought it was longer ago. Okay.
I don't know. I just, it, for some reason, I seem to remember that they had announced a change in pricing not all that long ago, but they're doing it again. And, you know, you got to pay for that. What is it? $2 billion of new content?
Right. Yeah. So it's going up by $1 or $2, depending on the plan that you're on. If you're on the $8 a month basic plan, it's going up to $9 a month. If you're on the $11 standard plan, that one gets you HD streaming and two concurrent streams. That's going up to $13 a month. And the Ultra, I think it's called Ultra plan, the one that gives you 4K streaming, that one's going from $14 to $16 a month. Is this the first streaming service like this to breach the $15 a month price tag? I think it is.
Interesting. Yeah, it might be. Of course, they have that higher definition offering there. I don't really know of any other common subscription streaming service that's offering 4K as part of its package. So I can see why they might be, I was going to say ahead, that's probably not the right word, higher than the rest of the competition there. But it still irks me, right? Because Netflix is, so, right, there's two Netflix perspectives in Richard's head. One of them is Netflix stockholder Richard, who says, yay, they're going to get more money. The other one is Netflix consumer Richard, who says, I've been with this company for years and years and years, and I just see a history of them raising prices beyond inflation. And that kind of irks me. As technology improves, they're charging more for what essentially seems like the same service. And you have to assume that it's because of their obscene expenses associated with creating new content. And I wouldn't be all that frustrated about it if it weren't for the fact that Netflix will create 100 new programs and maybe one or two of those will be good.
You think it's that low?
Yeah.
You think the ratio is that bad?
Oh, I absolutely do. I absolutely do. I mean, have you looked at how many Netflix originals there are out there? There is so much random stuff that gets zero attention.
Well, it gets zero attention from middle-aged white guys, but they've got their own kid shows, things like that. Like, my daughter watches some Netflix originals. I would never choose to watch them, but they're there. Mm-hmm. And she's not going to watch Stranger Things or House of Cards, but they're there. I mean, is it that they only pump out one or two good shows a year, or that they're actually pretty decent at giving shows to every potential niche audience?
That is a possibility that I might not have considered. I tend to think that my interests are fairly diverse, but I don't know. I don't know. I just, whatever. I get that they're probably the best offering out there, and so they can get away with this, and they're not going to lose many customers as a result. It just irks me, particularly when they have this whole "we don't play with anyone else" attitude that they've taken recently, right? Like, they don't integrate with universal searches on devices. They don't integrate with Apple TV for automated login. You still have to actually physically type your email address and password in when you log on a device. I just logged into my Netflix account on a Roku. They don't even have like a validation code that you can go to on a mobile device. It's like they're making no attempt whatsoever to make the process easier for consumers. They're just all about the content.
So is this the last straw then? Are you cutting your subscription?
Of course not. That's what really pisses me off.
Right. The person that you're the most mad at is yourself.
Yeah, I don't know that I'm going to admit that.
Doug filled us in. He says that Netflix's last price increase was February 24th, 2018, not even a year ago.
That sounds about right.
Wow. Yeah, $2 in a year is... That's a pretty fast rate. I'm not going to cut my subscription either. And I'm paying for the top tier one because I got a 4K TV. So why wouldn't I be paying for the top tier one?
Yep. Yeah, me too.
So new customers are getting this pricing now. If you're an existing customer, you'll be getting it soon in the coming months. All right. Perhaps, maybe Netflix's biggest competitor would be Hulu. Maybe it's Amazon, but we're going to say it's Hulu because that's who our next news story is about. It makes the transition easier. They've rolled out an update to their Windows 10 app, which, I don't know, kind of surprised me that this was in the news, but they did. And it's not the most surprising way for them to update it. I think it's a way that actually makes a lot of sense. Instead of having a completely custom, completely native version of their app for Windows 10. Instead, they've converted it over to a progressive web app, a PWA. That just means that it's an app running on your computer and you'll launch it from the start menu the way you would any other app. But it's really just a web page, which you sometimes can tell with PWAs that they're web pages and sometimes you can't when they're done well. I don't currently have a Hulu subscription. Richard, you do. How is this new updated Hulu app on Windows 10?
Yeah, it's not just a web page. It is the web page. It is their Hulu.com site in a wrapper. That is exactly what this is. And maybe that's lame. I tend to think that's lame because I tend to think that somebody is losing out there, right? That the same experience does not work equally well for desktop and touch and web browsing and so on. However, the good news here is that their website over the last year or so has been way better than any of their crappy apps.
Mm.
Like you may remember that when they came out with their redesigned app where they tried to create a TV and touch experience that was almost identical and pretty much made no sense on the big screen, because it didn't use any of the big screen. Like literally you saw maybe five titles, text only with a background image to scroll through five at a time instead of seeing any sort of like heavily graphical scannable list of tiles. Mm. And their website is tile based. It still uses the heavy color themes and it still uses big panels with background images, but it is a much more traditional tile based interface that makes it much easier to scan and find content. So that's a good thing. I have liked where they've been going with their website over the last year or so. So I guess I'm glad to see this. I don't know that I would want to see this hit iOS. I would be frustrated if this is what the iOS app ended up being because I'd wonder why I'd need it. I could just go to the website.
So would the website be an acceptable solution on iOS, or is their iOS app better than what the website gives you? Because that's what it really comes down to, right?
Right, right. And I doubt the website would be an acceptable solution because my bet, I haven't tried it, but my bet would be that they cripple the website and they don't allow you to play video from the website on your tablet in iOS. You probably have to use the app.
Mm.
So, okay. Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I don't know that irony is the word here, but the funny thing is that the crappy experience that they did create 2 years ago that doesn't work for television is actually a pretty nice touch interface. It's a it's a very fluid touch interface that I liked quite a lot.
Hmm. Which is not normally how that works out.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Okay. So I'd say that the other benefit to this, if you're a Windows 10 user who particularly likes using apps for things, then this means that you're not going to have to wait around for new features. Because if it is basically just a wrapper on the website, as soon as the website gets new features, you'll get them in the app too.
Yeah, presumably that's true. I mean, they may deploy separately for the different platforms, but yeah, it's very likely that this will get maintained more frequently and you won't basically have to have constant updates to your and download those updates to your device every time they make a change. So that's good.
Right. All right, on to some audio news. Google this time. Chromecast keeps coming up on this show, and it really just keeps frustrating me. Google is now killing off the Chromecast audio dongle.
Good.
This is good. You're happy about this? Why are you happy about this?
I just didn't understand why this even existed. It seemed like a superfluous product.
Why?
Because they have Chromecast. Why did we need one that just did audio?
Because what if I just want to listen to music?
So like, too bad. Pay the $35 and just get a Chromecast. It's $35. I mean, come on.
Well, right. But what if I wanted to just listen to music through speakers?
Yeah.
What if I had a nice set of bookshelf speakers in my kitchen and I didn't have a TV? A Chromecast is an HDMI dongle. A Chromecast audio, you just plug an audio cable into it. It doesn't require a TV. It also supported multi-device streaming before the regular Chromecast device. So you could have these all over your house and have multi-room audio for dirt cheap, because this thing was at most $35 and you just plug it into any speakers you have, including an AV receiver if you wanted. And in that case, maybe you do just want to go with the regular Chromecast. But in a lot of cases, I thought the Chromecast audio made a whole lot of sense. Now, I can say that really easily, but I never bought one. I never ended up actually buying one. I had plans. I thought about it a while and then just never ended up doing it. And partly for the reason that they killed this. Instead, I ended up with a Google Home out in the kitchen where I wanted to have music most easily available to me. And the Google Home was a good enough solution that provided other functionality than just music. But
right,
music is still the thing that we use our Google Home devices for way more than anything else. And I've got smart home devices. I use it for controlling my lights and stuff like that. But we still use all of our Google Home devices more for music than smart home, than asking Google questions, you know, than anything else. So having something like Chromecast audio, I think still makes a lot of sense, even though Google Home devices exist. But that's where Google is going with this. They were quoted
exactly
by, as saying, our product portfolio continues to evolve, and now we have a variety of products for users to enjoy audio. We've therefore stopped manufacturing our Chromecast audio products. We will continue to offer assistance for Chromecast audio devices so users can continue to enjoy their music, podcast, and more. Okay, great. Like, I understand why you do this, because for most people, they're probably not using this, probably not that interested in this. The other thing going for them, and this is something we've talked about a lot over the last few months, is they recently started allowing other regular Chromecast dongles to participate in speaker groups. And that's great. That's what I want. Here's the problem. It's still months later, only works on real Chromecast dongles, not anything that has Chromecast built into it, like my TV, like my NVIDIA Shield. Neither of those show up as devices that I can add to speaker groups.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So it's Google Homes and Chromecast. That's it.
Yeah, and I think that their thought there is if you're an audio-only user, then buy a Google Home. Buy a Home Hub. It's $35, still on sale. You get a free light bulb with that. I mean, you know, I think that's the direction that they're going. The funny thing here is that roughly the time that they're getting rid of this product, Amazon is coming out with the Echo input.
Right.
Which is essentially their version of a Chromecast.
Yeah. It's
audio.
Almost identical to a Chromecast audio. Right. Right. I'm not switching though. I'm not going to go get one of those.
Come on, do it. Nope. Do it.
Nope. Staying in the Google Home ecosystem, not switching to Amazon's voice assistant. Don't worry. I'm not going to say her name. All right. Well, let's move into our gaming news, I guess. I'm going to do these out of order, Richard. We're going to stick with voice assistants at first here. The Xbox One, we've mentioned this a little bit over the last couple of months. They've been working to make Cortana work better and be more functional with an Xbox One, especially when paired with Amazon's voice assistant. So while there aren't very many people that have Cortana-powered speakers in their house, I can still only think of one, and that's the Harman Kardon Invoke. There's lots of people who have Amazon's voice assistant devices, the Echoes and all of that stuff, all over the place. And you can use them to control your Xbox, but it's clunky and you have to say a lot of words. It's a far stretch from the good old days of 2013 when your Xbox One came with a big honking microphone that also had a camera on it called the Kinect. And you could just say things like Xbox on, two words, and your Xbox and your TV and your receiver and all that stuff just turned on. Now, you have to say things like, hey, C lady, tell Xbox to turn on. What? That's ridiculous. They're working on it, though. They are making it better. You can now say, C lady, launch Netflix, or C lady, Xbox on. Like, instead of all of this tell Xbox blah, 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 you can get rid of the tell Xbox blah, blah, blah. You just say things like, launch Forza Horizon 4, and it'll turn on your Xbox and fire up Forza Horizon 4. That's great. That's exactly what you want. There's one pretty major flaw in this, though. It still only works through the Invoke, not through your Xbox, not through the Cortana app on your phone, not even through the Cortana app on your Windows 10 PC. So before we get some angry tweets and emails and stuff, I'll give them the benefit of the doubt that this is probably going to come to those other devices. But get a move on here, folks. Like, make this work. Just make this work everywhere, please.
So I was actually chatting online with our listener, Chris, who is probably the most avid Cortana fan and user that I know. Mm-hmm. And he's probably also the most knowledgeable person that I know about Cortana and its capabilities across devices. And one of the things that I said to him is that I love that they're coming out with new features. I don't understand that they're coming out with new features literally days after their CEO publicly states that we are no longer making this a personal assistant, but they don't have parity across platforms. And all that does is create customer confusion.
Right.
If you try this with your Xbox and it doesn't work, and you're not a geek who follows news like what we talk about or what we read, then you're just not going to try it again.
Right.
So yeah. I don't understand their strategy here. I don't understand why they wouldn't wait and launch on all platforms where this makes sense.
Yeah, it's just baffling. I don't get it. I don't get it at all. I mean, maybe they thought, let's launch it on the Invoke first, because the 15 people who own them probably won't even notice and definitely won't tell the rest of the world. But they were wrong. All right. Well, let's move on from all of this voice assistant talk and let's talk gaming. All right. I teased this at the beginning of the show, right after Richard and I recorded the last episode from the floor of CES. If you watched that video, it's up on our YouTube page. If you watched that video, you might have seen a big giant booth in the background. It was all black with a little funny squiggly green logo. That's Razer. And I marched myself over to Razer's booth after we recorded to get hands-on time with the Razer turret. It is the keyboard and mouse combination that they are going to be releasing for the Xbox One later this quarter. It's amazing. It's absolutely like, I didn't think I could get excited about a keyboard and mouse for gaming because I'm not a keyboard and mouse gamer. I'm a console gamer primarily, and I like holding a controller. It's easy. It's easy on the couch. It's easy in a comfy chair. Keyboard and mouse, how well is this going to work on the couch? So I had to get some hands-on time with it, and I did, and they had it set up in a traditional living room environment. I was on a couch with a coffee table in front of me and a TV on the other side of that, and I sat back on the couch and put this keyboard and mouse on my lap, and it worked wonderfully. It just plain works. It's a nice, heavily weighted keyboard that is not going to slide all over the place on you. It's got, you know, those wonderful tactile mechanical keys. It's got all of the Razer Chroma lighting that you probably love in your keyboards and mice if you're into gaming and stuff.
And I'm sure all of you married people that your spouses love it too. On the coffee table.
That bad. It's not like the lighting just is crazy bright and fills up your whole room or anything like that. But they've just thought of everything, and that's why I fell in love with this device. It, like I said, the weighting and all of that feels great. It doesn't move around. The mouse pad sort of thing, that it's more of a mouse tray, I guess, that slides out from the keyboard is adequately sized. Some people might think it's too small. I don't know. Maybe if I was super hardcore, I might claim that it's too small, but I got to play a game with it and it didn't seem like the mouse area was too small. It's also magnetic, the tray itself. So the whole thing is magnetic, but outside, the very far outside edge, the right side edge of the tray has a really strong magnetic pull so that you can just set the mouse there and store it. And it's not going to fall off when you go to move the keyboard to the coffee table or wherever you're going to store it. You can flip this thing upside down and the mouse doesn't fall off. That's how strong it is.
And as I remember, you did.
I did. I absolutely did. You know, you can't tell me, oh, you can flip it upside down and it won't fall off and not expect me to try it. Of course I tried it. And then on the rest of the keyboard, or on the rest of the mouse tray, it's got just a little bit of magnetic pull so that if your lap isn't perfectly flat, it's not going to go flying off. If you let go of the mouse, it's not going to slide off. But it's not so strong of a magnetic force that you're going to notice it. Within seconds, I didn't notice it. So I don't think you have to worry about any of that. So there's one other really, really, really important thing about this, I think. It is the only keyboard that will be released in 2019 that has an Xbox key. It is the same functionality as the round Xbox button in your game controller. That button that you use all the time when you're playing Xbox. If you don't want to have to also have a controller sitting next to you on the couch, then having this Xbox button matters a lot. Paul in the chat says, will the Windows key do the same thing?
I was wondering that. I was thinking that.
That's a great question.
Paul, we're thinking alike here.
That's a great question. I don't know. Anyone could try, I suppose, because keyboard support works now. You could plug any USB keyboard into an Xbox and try that. I don't know. I should go and try it after the show and report back next time. So I think that's a really, really huge deal. The only downside to this whole thing is the price. All of this comes at quite a steep price. It is $250 for this keyboard and mouse combination. And I'm trying to justify it because it's not... Because
you want one.
Well, I do want it. I shouldn't get it, but I do kind of want it because it is so good. And it'll work with your PC also. It's just a USB dongle that connects to both devices. One dongle, so you're only using one USB port on your Xbox to power up both devices. So you could justify it as, hey, I'm getting a keyboard and mouse for my Xbox and my PC. See, I saved us money. The other thing is that these devices, you know, if you were to buy a Razer keyboard and a Razer mouse for your PC, you're easily going to spend close to that amount of money or more anyway. So it's not like it's that much more expensive than other high-end gaming peripherals.
Right.
Razer stuff costs a lot of money.
And it's probably not that much more expensive than if I went to the Apple store and bought a Magic keyboard and Magic mouse. In all honesty.
Probably not. And it's far more useful in a living room environment than if you were to go and do something like that. So I like it. I like it a whole lot. I really doubt I'm going to get one, but yeah, like there's no chance that I'm buying one of these. If I bought one of these, I think Jen would use it to bludgeon me to death. Because you could. It's heavy enough to do that. But so let's maybe not tempt fate and do that.
And see, I think you already ruined your chance of getting a review unit because you already wrote a glowing hands-on article about it.
Maybe. But if they want to send me one to like really do a longer term review with it, I would absolutely do that. There's plenty of games that already support it. There's plenty of games coming out that I would hope will support it. So yeah, I would totally try it out.
So that's the other thing. Remember that not all games are going to be supporting the wireless keyboard and mouse.
Well, and keyboards and mice in general. Not every game supports it. Right now, there's around 15 or so games that support it. But Fortnite is one of them. I mean, that's the biggest game on the planet right now. Warframe, there are a lot of games that do support it. And then it's up to the individual game developers about how they want to individually support it. So do they want to put you into the same multiplayer lobby as people who are using controllers or not? In some games, that won't matter. In a first-person shooter, you will decimate everybody who's using a controller if you have a keyboard and mouse. Well, I probably still wouldn't because I'm not that good. But most people probably would.
Paul up in the game chat developer is reminding us that, of course, Sea of Thieves is also supported.
He also says it's the biggest game. Right. Thank you, Captain Paul. I don't think so. All right. So that's it for our gaming news for tonight. Richard, you've barely been home this year. For this year, you've been gone more than you've been home.
This is true.
You have about 87 bullet points as to what's going on in your entertainment center.
So here's the thing. We haven't talked about this stuff for like a month now.
Mm.
And we had a holiday or two in there during which I had some time off. So I actually got to do some stuff in my entertainment center. This is not just about stuff I've been watching. I actually made some changes in my entertainment center. Some good, some bad, some sad. let's start with the sad. I officially retired my Media Center PC.
What?
If you follow me on Twitter, you probably already know this because I posted the launching screen of Media Center the last and final time that I ran it before shutting everything down. And I repurposed the Mac Mini that I had for that and made it basically Edward's desktop PC. It's a good computer. It's an i5. Right? It's a really good computer, and it runs Windows 10 really nicely.
Right.
So, Yeah, we have that running on I don't even know what they call it, a QUHD, an enormous monitor. It's like a 32-inch monitor, and it's nice. It looks really good. So I, yeah, it's the end of both of us ever, probably ever using, touching Media Center again.
Yeah. I've still got mine. Just, it's just sitting in the basement unplugged. I haven't touched it in a long, gosh, I don't even know how long ago it was. I took mine out of commission. You know, this would actually be a good point for us to remind people though, that if you're running a Windows 7 Media Center PC, you have a year until you should probably strongly consider pulling the plug on yours, because in about a year, it's January of 2020, Microsoft stops supporting Windows 7. You won't get updates anymore. And that includes security updates.
Yeah.
So you should be spending 2019 figuring out what your plan is to move away from Windows Media Center.
The whole year. Spend the year thinking about it.
It pains me to say that because I still love it. I still miss it.
Yeah,
me too. There were still so many things that it did so well.
Yep.
But yeah. Ugh.
Well, in doing so, I needed to relocate some of my attached storage because I had the hard drive that had all my recorded programs on it that I'm not going to throw out because, you know, I hoard digital content. And I had my TV Drobo attached to it. That's the Drobo that had all of my archived content that I have on disk, as well as other things that I had recorded. And they were attached directly to that PC. And that's how I accessed them through the network. That's how Plex got to them. So I needed to move those devices into my closet with my Plex server. And now they're both connected directly to my Plex server. So it has direct access to that content. And in theory, it should be a lot faster to get to stuff through Plex. Although I honestly haven't had much of a chance to use Plex since I've done this. There's another reason that I haven't used Plex a whole lot. And that's because as a part of all this maintenance, I figured, I should probably run some firmware updates that are available on my Drobos. And I did that on my network-connected Drobo that has all my movies on it, and it's dead now.
Oh, no.
This is my Franken-Drobo. This is the one that I resurrected about a year ago with an attached fan that has an electrical cord coming out of the side of the box to plug in separately because I couldn't get the power on the board to power it. And it's already gone through one data recovery process. That cost me $50. I think Drobo service now costs $100. And I have to decide, am I going to pay for and go through all of that process again? I mean, arguably, having to re-record my 900 movies that I had on that drive is probably worth more than $100. That my time is probably worth way more than $100. Right. So I should just do it and get it done. But man, it just irks me. It really irks me. And now I'm thinking, okay, well, I do $100. That's just going to be to recover it because I don't see how I can trust this platform that much longer. If nope. Twice now I have more or less, you know, virtually bricked these devices in a way that required some third party to come and help me recover the data. That's ridiculous.
So what's next for you? Like, what are you going to use in place of that Drobo?
I don't know. I have to find out what Dave McCabe's favorite storage device is. I'll listen to some more episodes of Reset. He was just talking about some new storage devices, actually, on recent episodes. So the thing is, I usually don't get all that kind of deep into that area, and I don't pay as much attention to that space because I'm like, oh, I'm covered. I'm good. I got 20 terabytes. Right now, I got 0 terabytes.
That's not enough. I'm not a math whiz, but I'm pretty sure that 0 terabytes is not enough.
No, it's definitely not. So, yeah. So I need to explore that. All right. A little bit of other updating going on in my home. And this is the result of something that happened at CES. You and I went on the Google ride at CES. And man, Google was all about the swag this year. They had contests where you could win stuff and they were giving out gift cards and they were giving out the Google Home devices. And if you went on the ride, they gave you a Google Home Hub.
Yeah.
So you and I both have a Google Home Hub now. I just woke up my Google Home over there just by saying that. I'm still getting used to this thing. So I love this thing. I absolutely love this thing. I put it in my bedroom. You were on Home On a couple episodes ago, and you were saying how this really is the perfect bedside device. I thought, well, I don't have the new alarm clock that I funded on Kickstarter 2 years ago, because that's not out yet. Saw it at CES, though, so that was kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
And my alarm clock is kind of worthless. It's years and years old. It has a 30-pin connector on it for my iPod that I don't have anymore. And it would be nice if I had a more up-to-date alarm clock. This is an amazing alarm clock. It actually makes the most delightful wake-up noise ever.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm thoroughly, thoroughly impressed by it. It also has a photos mode that does the same thing that those Samsung frame TVs that we were talking about on the last episode do, where they adjust the light and contrast to completely mimic the environment they're in, so it looks like it's a static picture. It doesn't look like it's a lighted screen.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. It's absolutely beautiful. I love the thing. And it's in my bedroom, and I have a TV in my bedroom, and I don't have a TiVo in my bedroom. So I thought, maybe I should buy a Chromecast for the bedroom TV. And then I could use this thing to cast stuff to my TV. That would be really cool. So I bought a new Google Chromecast. And I hooked it up, and I haven't had time to play with it yet. But that will be one of the things that I'm doing in the next month or so.
Yeah, we've got ours in the kitchen. We replaced the regular Google Home, put that in the bedroom, and moved this device to the kitchen. And yeah, I love it. The idea of using it as an alarm clock makes a ton of sense, because when it goes, like when it's dark in the room, the display goes almost completely black.
Yeah, you can have it go completely black if you wanted to, or it can just show you the time in an insanely dark mode, like darker than any, say, tablet or phone I've ever seen that had an alarm clock app.
Yep. Yeah, we love it. It's a really, really cool device. And they've had them on sale. Like, it's regularly $150, but I think they've had them for $100. I think they had them for like $85 recently. So it is a pretty nice device.
They are clearly trying to move these things. It is still $100. And, you know, I was kind of joking, but in all seriousness, you can still buy the Google Home Mini with a light bulb for $35.
Mm-hmm.
So they are pushing these things.
And just to be super clear on this thing, it does not have a camera. So if you're worried about putting it in your bedroom because of a camera, you don't have to worry. It doesn't have one.
Right.
And it does have a physical mute switch. So you can make it not listen to you if you want it to not listen to you.
Yep. Very nicely designed device. Audio quality is decent on it. I'm very, very happy with it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Interesting. All right. I have been watching a bunch of content. I'll try and go through this fairly quickly. The usuals, This Is Us in New Amsterdam. I'm not up to date because they restarted after the new year and I was away and haven't had a chance to catch up. I am up to date on the sitcoms, The Conners, Superstore, and Modern Family. Watched a couple of episodes of Hawaii Five-0 and Deadwood. We are continuing to power through on Game of Thrones. I'm near the end of season 5 now for Let's Talk About Thrones. We just recorded an episode yesterday, and we're recording another episode tomorrow as we get ready for the 8th season to start on April 14th, my birthday. I also watched the final episode, which is really the special episode, I should say, of the latest episode of Doctor Who, the latest season of Doctor Who. That was pretty good. It wasn't fantastic, but it was pretty good. And I really like what they've done with that series. I think the season has been good. I like the Doctor. I am eager to see what they do next, but I have to wait until 2020 because no more Doctor Who this year, which kind of sucks. The Orville has started its second season, and wow, this show is wow, so good. All of the fun stuff that you expect from the Orville, the way they set it up, but the themes and the storylines and how they apply to real world issues, just like Star Trek used to, is just amazing. Their writing is absolutely fantastic. I watched the rest of Mars that ended, I think, just before we went away, and I enjoyed watching that. That was a really good series. Not as long as I wish it were. I hope that they're going to have a third season because that's been pretty fun. I also binge watched all of Bodyguard. I forget. Is this something that you were watching or not? This is like a British intrigue thing on Netflix.
Nope. Didn't watch that.
I really liked it. Told our friends about it. One of them was like, oh yeah, that was really good. I'm looking forward to season two. And her husband said, oh, it was so predictable. Everybody likes different things. So mm-hmm. I don't mean to make the disparaging voice, but he really didn't like it. I finished the first season of Good Place. The Good Place. Sorry, the is very important. I knew there was a twist at the end. Didn't turn out the way I thought it was going to, which is cool.
Yep.
And I have to say that the last three episodes of the season were, I think, just amazing. I think they did such a good job. And now I'm really eager to start season two, but I've had some other stuff that I've wanted to finish off before getting into that. But I now understand why you like it so much, because at the end, it was really, really strong.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
One more TV show before I get back to that particular actress. I'll mention her again in a second. But one of my guilty pleasures has started up again. Celebrity Big Brother started literally last night. And there were all these rumors about who was going to be on it. And there was some speculation about different Olympic athletes. And in fact, there are two Olympic athletes on it, in addition to Scaramucci.
Anthony Scaramucci?
Like, he has nothing better to do with his life than be on Big Brother?
Well, he only worked in the White House for a few hours, right? What else is he got going on?
I just don't understand. I really, really don't understand. Anyway, I already have someone that I picked that I want to win. I'm rooting for Ricky Williams, a former NFL player. I for whatever reason, I like his story. He seems like a decent guy.
You like his story?
Not like a jerk. Yeah, like he has
kind
of a...
His story is he was an amazingly talented football player who smoked too much pot.
And kind of had to deal with that in life then, right? So I thought it was interesting. So I want to see how he does. I'm rooting for him. He seems not like a jerk, like a lot of the other people who are already rolling their eyes at everybody. Like, really, just give people a chance here. Talking of Kristen Bell, I watched The Boss. Have you seen that?
I don't know what The Boss is, but if it's got Kristen Bell, I should probably watch it.
Yeah, you should totally watch this. You will probably like it, I think. I don't know, unless you can't stand Melissa McCarthy. I adore Melissa McCarthy. I think she's hysterical. And it's yet another, stereotypical is the wrong word, formulaic Melissa McCarthy movie. But it's entertaining, and I think Kristen Bell is great in it. So give it a try. It was free on some movie channel, so we watched it there. Also watched Ant-Man and the Wasp, which I really enjoyed. And we had the kids over a couple nights ago, so we watched Smallfoot, which is an interesting Warner Brothers animation movie, basically about a tribe of Yetis and why they are afraid of humans. It was cute. I really liked it. And one more thing I thought I would mention, just because it's kind of fun. I created a new folder, or I guess a new library, I should say, in Plex, and it's called Drone. And I created that because my Christmas present this year was a drone.
Nice.
And watching the 4K pictures it takes on my television, they're just freaking gorgeous. Absolutely amazing. And I get the whole thing. Like, I understand the concept of a gimbal, but I am still just blown away by how good and steady the images are from this thing. When it, you look at it and it seems to be rocking all over the place.
That's cool.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. For the drone nerds out there, they're going to want to know, which drone do you have?
Oh, yeah, that's a good question. I have an Autel Evo. So it's Autel Robotics, and it's the product that they announced, I believe, about a year ago. They were, I believe, debuting it at CES last year. And it is a really nice drone. And yes, I have crashed it already. It's fine, but yeah. And according, you know, we were talking to Dave McCabe at CES, and he said, well, yeah, you got to rip some stuff up with it. I'm like, yeah, but it's expensive. I don't want to bust it.
Right. For sure.
So anyway, lots going on with me. And how about you? What are you doing these days? What have you been watching? What have you been playing with? Have you been like playing with any devices?
A little bit. Maybe not so much devices, because same devices. But I think I'm done with my Plex DVR experiment. I think I'm going to switch back over to the HD Home Run DVR because I'm sick of the Plex DVR not recording. And I would say The Good Place, but it's not just The Good Place. I've mentioned that I also have it set up to record the Sunday morning news programs and stuff. And I noticed that like the last episode of Meet the Press that it had recorded was in November. Now, obviously, I don't really use it that much or else I would have caught that far sooner. I normally just listen to the podcast, but I've got them set up to test those recordings and stuff. And having those Good Place recordings messed up constantly is a giant pain in my butt. So yeah, over the weekend, I switched it to use the HD Home Run DVR, and we'll see how that goes. Now, it's all the same hardware and stuff. It's still running on the NVIDIA Shield TV as the server. Maybe the only difference is that for some recordings, I had the Plex DVR recording straight to my NAS. I've got a Synology DS216 that it was recording to. As opposed to the, what is it, a 4 terabyte USB hard drive that I've plugged into that thing. With the HD Home Run DVR, you can't really change where it records. It has to just record locally there. So that's what it's doing, and we'll see how that goes. I think, yeah, there's only one more episode of The Good Place left this season, so we'll see. And I didn't check to see if it had recorded the Sunday morning talk shows yet, the Sunday morning news program. So I'm going to guess and hope that it did, but I don't know for sure. So I'll keep y'all updated on that, of course. I have been keeping up with The Good Place. Fortunately, Joe, my co-host on Story Players, is a huge Good Place fan, and he's got Plex. So when my DVR screws up, we just watch The Good Place together on our lunch break at work. So using his Hulu account. Yeah. Yeah. And comedies are always more fun to watch with friends anyway. Things are just funnier when you're watching with friends. I also watched a movie. I did this, I guess this will be our last reference to CES. On the flight out to CES, I watched Blade Runner 2049. I was excited to watch this. It was good. I think I liked it more than the original Blade Runner. I certainly found it less, I don't know, nap inspiring than the
original. I was waiting for you to say boring.
I don't want to call Blade Runner boring, but it was slow, and they didn't spell out anything for you in the original one. You had to figure it all out for yourself. Yep. That is not the case at all with Blade Runner 2049. They spoon feed it all to you, and I'm okay with that. It was an enjoyable movie. I liked it a lot. Cool. Definitely worth checking out. And it's available in 4K on Vudu and stuff. That's what I ended up doing. It was on sale for like $6 or $7 in 4K on Vudu, so I just bought it that way.
Wait, to buy for $7? That's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. It was.
It didn't do that badly in the theaters.
No, I mean they had a sale where they were selling a bunch of movies for. I mean they had like 45 movies for sale for less than $10 in 4K.
Cool.
So yeah, on the gaming front, have not played a lot of games lately. It wasn't just. CES, although that made it kind of impossible during that week. Even the week after, I didn't get to play a whole lot. This weekend, I finally got to play a little and really wanted to play some multiplayer stuff. So Joe and I got online and played some Call of Duty. You know, we were really excited. We really liked the latest Call of Duty Black Ops 4. So we decided to play some of that since it had been a while. Loved it. Still absolutely love that game. But there's new games coming soon, a bunch of them, a bunch of really big games coming out at the end of January, all through February and into March, which is super weird, Richard. Like typically all the big games come out in September, October, November, not in February, but that is not the case this year. It's mostly Red Dead Redemption's fault. No one wanted to put out their games right around Red Dead Redemption. So the one I'm most excited about, The Division 2. People who've been listening for a long time may or may not remember that when the first Tom Clancy's The Division came out, I think 3 years ago, I was so pumped and played that game a ton. And I'm all the more excited for The Division 2. So much so that last night after we played Call of Duty, I decided, let's fire up The Division. Let's see what this was like. And I immediately fell right back into it. I was thinking about it all day today. Like, oh, cool. I just want The Division 2 to come out. So I'm really excited about that. If you're excited about it too, let me know. Hopefully we can play once that game comes out in, I should know the date. It's like the second Friday in March or something like that. So I'm looking forward to it.
Cool. Very good.
Paul in the chat says he's now addicted to Ori and the Blind Forest. He's saying it's my fault for recommending it.
Yeah, I think that's
you're welcome.
Fair.
It's a fantastic game.
It's so beautiful. It's just so visually stunning.
Yeah. Yeah. Everything about that game is great.
Cool. Cool. Well, before we go, a quick announcement. You said that you probably made the last CES reference. Nope. Two more. One of them is here. I was recently on the Smarter Home Life's 2019 CES discussion panel, and Joe DeGanzik, the host of Smarter Home Life, had a couple people on. I was on with Allison Sheridan and Ann Pruitt, and we all gave our different perspectives on CES and the things that we liked, things that we didn't like. What was pretty clever about this is that he stitches it all together as if it were a panel discussion, but he talked with each of us separately. So
So it's clicked into the video link of yours from Twitter today.
Uh-huh.
And I assumed it was just a Google Hangout that you all four recorded at the same time.
Yeah, no, he did a pretty good job of pulling it all together. So it seemed relatively seamless. So it's pretty cool. Pretty cool. So check that out if you're interested in my thoughts there. My apologies for the hotel room backdrop. You know, that's where I was.
Right. All right. Well, if you want to get a hold of us, we are on Twitter. Richard is at Richard Gunther. I'm at Josh Pollard. And the website is at Digi Media Zone, DIGI Media Zone. We're also over at facebook.com/theDMZ. We also have new episodes of our other podcast to check out. Well, one available now, one available soon. I'll go first since mine's the one that's available now. Story Players is back. Joe and I got together to record an episode for Life is Strange 2, episode 1, available now. It's Life is Strange. We were, of course, going to cover that game. So go and check that out if you're into story-driven video games. We got spoiler cast for you. It is all right there over the DMZ. And Richard, you've got an episode of Home On coming soon.
I do. Working on it now. It is the interview show from CES. We talked with about 6 or 7 different vendors there that had stuff that was kind of interesting, including some vendors on the smart kitchen side. So I'm excited to share that shortly. And then we'll be back to our usual lineup. I have some pretty cool guests lined up, particularly after being at CES and talking with some of the companies that had interesting stuff to show there.
Cool. And we invite you to come and join us as we record this show live on Tuesday nights at 8:30 p.m. Eastern, usually. Now that, you know, we're done with CES and all of that, we should be getting back into our normal routine here. So Tuesday nights, follow us on Twitter to know for sure if we're going to be live that night. But we normally are, so come and join the fun as a few guys did tonight. And you get to be a part of the show when you do it. So check that out, of course, because that's going to do it for episode 473. He's Richard Gunther, and I'm Josh Pollard. Thanks for listening to Entertainment 2.0. Adios.
Goodbye.